here to talk about Dak Shirley. The sentry gave her directions to the nearest common area, where she did her best to look as though she had only just stepped off her bridge. She couldn't wait to get back to the Salvation and see what kind of mess Nitram had made of her duty rosters. She studied her face in the mirror for a long time, wondering, despite herself, what Shire saw in her. Couldn't he see how wrecked she looked? Was he oblivious to the bags under her eyes and her flight helmet hair? Would he still like her if he saw her as she really was? Psychological scars and all? Not for the first time, she wished there were someone among the rebels she could talk to about things other than tactics and starship specifications. If her mother was still alive. A hand touched her shoulder. "Excuse me, Captain Eclipse. The Commodore has asked for you." She tore her eyes away from her face and saw another version of her standing behind her. "Thanks, Proxy. You know you're doing it again. Only this time you look like me." The droid's holographic image shimmered and vanished with a flash.
"I'm sorry, Captain Eclipse. I don't know what compels me."
He put a hand to his metal forehead.
"Perhaps another overhaul is in order."
"Next time we see that handy little droid, I'll put in a request." She took a second to make sure her uniform wasn't out of order. "Come on, or we'll be late." The meeting was in the same place as before. This time, she and the Commodore were the only flesh-and-blood participants. Mon Mothma and Garmbel Iblis attended via hologram. Their gray-blue forms flickered and crackled, thanks to interference from the looming nebula. Leia Organa was conspicuous by her absence. "Difficulties arranging transmission," Vetus explained when he saw her glance at the empty projector. "I suggest we begin regardless."
"We've received an overture from the Dak Resistance," said Mon Mothma without preamble. "Akbar has successfully united the Quarren and the Mon Calamari and convinced them to openly stand against the Empire. He promises ships if we help him liberate the shipyards."
"That's excellent news," said Bel Iblis. "And excellent timing, given our recent conversation on this matter."
"The very thing that makes me suspicious,"
Mon Mothma said.
"Where were you these last 2 days, Captain Eclipse?"
"I was relieved of command," Juno said. "So I took the opportunity to tie up some loose ends."
"On Dak, perchance?"
"I'm flattered, Senator, if you think I could pull off something like this on my own."
A third holographic figure flickered into being next to the others. Instead of Leia, though, it was Bail Organa, looking scruffy and cramped in his miner's disguise.
"Sorry to hold you up. I had to move to Mon Eron to obtain a secure line. It's a mess here at the moment. You might have heard."
"We were just talking about it,"
said Mon Mothma, looking unsurprised at his appearance rather than his daughter's.
"Captain Eclipse here denies any involvement."
"Actually," Juno put in, "what I said was that I couldn't have done it alone."
"Indeed."
Mon Mothma raised an eyebrow.
"I suppose, Bail, your daughter would say the same."
"I don't know what Leia would say," said Organa.
"And I'm not sure why you're asking me. Why don't you ask her directly instead of hauling me in out of the cold?"
Mon Mothma's disapproval was a formidable thing, even over a hologram.
"She might deny it, but I know that Leia orchestrated this unsanctioned operation with Captain Eclipse and Akbar as her conspirators, using confidential, privileged information. She acted precipitously and without consideration for the decisions we'd made regarding the future direction of the Alliance. She abused her position as your representative and betrayed our trust in the process."
"Perhaps she did, but what do you expect me to do about it? I can't suspend her like you suspended Captain Eclipse."
I believe it's time for you to come out of hiding and resume your position on this council before she comes up with yet another wild scheme. I thought it was rather a good scheme myself. That was why I was part of it.
He threw Juno a self-deprecatory salute.
If you're going to censure Leia, you'd better censure me, too.
Mon Mothma's lips tightened. She looked around the gathering, taking the measure of everyone present.
Did you know about this, Garm?
Bel Iblis looked warily amused.
Not the slightest thing, but I can't say I disapprove. This is everything Coda believed in. Small strategic strikes, employed to great effect. This little action might change the course of the battle, if we follow it up quickly.
But the risk, she said.
We might have lost Akbar and Bail. There's no such thing as a risk-free war,
Bel Iblis said.
And you can't force people not to fight if they want to. Isn't that a kind of tyranny in its own way?
Mon Mothma stiffened as though physically threatened. Then she sagged.
Yes, I suppose you're right. And even if you're not, it's clear I'm in a minority. So, what now? Do you propose we hand control over to an 18-year-old girl and let her decide our course?
Hardly, said Bail.
But you can listen to her and act on what she says. She speaks with my voice. Trust her judgment as I do. If her plan on deck had failed, I might well have died. But it didn't. She's an Organa, remember. We bring more than just our money to the cause.
Very well, said Mon Mothma. I shall do as you say. But that doesn't change the situation right now. The Mon Calamari Star Cruisers are promised but not delivered. Akbar is in no position to replace Kota, dealing as he is with his own planet's problems. Our resources are precious and stretched very thin.
The rebellion isn't something you can put on hold, said Organa. It's a living thing. It needs to be doing something, not just being.
A symbolic strike, said Juno, remembering what Organa had told her on Dax Moon. That's what we need. Something that will show our own people we still mean business, as well as the Emperor.
Agreed, said Bel Iblis.
All this skulking around, effective or not, doesn't do much to bring in new recruits.
All right, said Mon Mothma. All right. A symbolic strike it is. But against what? There are thousands of potential targets, each as dangerous as the next. What are our criteria? What's our time frame? Who leads the operation?
These are important questions, said Organa. I leave them in your capable hands, Senators. For now, I'd better sign off. The Empire is closely watching every signal that leaves the system. I don't want a squadron of TIEs landing on top of me, just as things are starting to get interesting.
We understand, said Bel Iblis.
When we've reached a decision, we'll let you know.
Thank you, Bail, said Mon Mothma. Be safe.
The third hologram flickered out.
Leadership is hard,
said Bel Iblis to Mon Mothma, not unsympathetically.
When there are three of us trying to lead at once.
If it were easy, we would have finished this long ago.
The two remaining senators signed off, leaving Commodore Vidas, Juno, and Proxy alone.
I think we just witnessed some progress, said the Commodore standing. Of a sort.
Juno understood what he meant. Mon Mothma had given ground, but the leadership might still argue for weeks before settling on an appropriate target. And this time, something low-key simply wouldn't do. It would have to be extremely visible to have the effect required.
I guess being seen to do something is better than doing nothing at all, she said, even if it's hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Careful, Captain Eclipse. You're becoming a cynic.
Politics will do that to you.
There are few immune to it, unfortunately.
Starkiller would have been, she wanted to say as the door closed between them. But she kept that thought to herself.
On the brief shuttle ride to the Salvation, Proxy changed shape without warning. Juno looked up from the controls.
Is that really you, Princess? Or is Proxy playing up again?
Call me Leia, came the instantaneous reply.
Wherever she was transmitting from, the signal was good.
Congratulations on the success of your mission, Captain. How did the meeting go?
Well enough, I think, Juno said, glad the shuttle was empty apart from her and Proxy.
I'm relieved your father was part of it.
Yes, he can handle the others better than I.
I wouldn't say that, Juno said. You have the advantage of being young. I think it puts Mon Mothma off her game.
It doesn't feel like an advantage when you're arguing with some of the old fools I have to deal with here at home. Alderaanian politics makes the Empire look like child's play.
Still, you got what you wanted. Don't discount that.
All right. Maybe I softened them up, but Father sealed the deal. And we couldn't have done it without you, of course.
Happy to serve, Juno said.
Although that might be a little more difficult now that I've got my command back. Thank goodness.
There was never any doubt of that. You'll be exactly where we can use you best. In the middle, not too far away from the action that you forget what's at stake, and not so close that you can't see the big picture. And you have a frigate at your disposal, which is nothing to be sniffed at when it comes to winning arguments.
Juno smiled. It didn't sound so bad the way Leia put it.
The important thing, Leia went on, is that we keep fighting on all fronts at once. Big stuff, small stuff, everything in between. The Empire isn't just the Emperor. It's all the people beneath him who serve him willingly. We have to take the fight to them, too.
Sounds exhausting. I get tired just thinking about it. They laughed together, more out of companionship than at anything particularly funny. Juno couldn't remember the last time she'd had anything at all to laugh about.
What are your plans now? She asked.
Well, the Death Star is still out there, said the princess. The Emperor has it well hidden from us, but it's too big a project to keep out of sight forever.
We'll find it one way or another, and we'll do our best to disrupt its construction.
That's our number one priority, because if it's ever operational, the entire galaxy will suffer.
She shrugged.
Apart from that, life goes on. University, training, all that ridiculous old house palaver. If my aunts had their way, I'd be paired off to some brainless boy before the year is out, and there'd go any chance I had of doing something real ever again.
Juno was forcefully reminded then of how young Leia was, at least. Boy troubles, parental expectations, frustrated ambition. For teenagers, some things were universal, even in the middle of a galactic revolution. Leia reminded Juno of herself not so very long ago.
My father tried to set me up with the son of a friend once, she told the princess.
A horrible boy. Not much more than a recruit. Thought he was going to be the next high commander, but could barely button up his uniform right. Somehow just being from the right side of the planet mattered more than anything about who he was.
What did you do?
Learned to be the best pilot in my sector and got myself transferred. The kid stayed behind, never made it above corporal for all his talk. My father probably still thinks I missed my chance.
Parents have no idea.
They laughed again, even as Juno wondered what was going on. Did the princess have so little contact with the people around her that she too had no one to talk to? That didn't seem possible. She had mentioned the university, after all, where there would be lots of people her age, and Juno was sure Bail Organa wouldn't let his daughter grow up isolated and socially inept.
At least Leia still knew her father, Juno thought. Her own father was so distant and alienated that she didn't even know if he was alive.
"Do you have a boyfriend at the moment?" Juno had asked her, testing the moment to see where it led.
To her credit, Leia didn't blush. "No one my aunts would approve of."
"Ah, it's like that. Watch out for the bad ones, Leia.
They're the ones who really mess you up."
"Everyone says that."
"Because it's true. Don't learn it the hard way, like I did." Instead of lumping Juno in with everyone and dismissing the advice, Leia nodded soberly.
"I guess you did."
Juno sobered, too. She hadn't even been thinking of Starkiller, but now she was. The pain was sharp and piercing, causing her to lower her eyes from the princess's searching gaze. And suddenly it was clear just how Leia saw her. Not as a friend or confidant, although she might claim either if directly asked. What else could a princess of the royal house of Alderaan, with rebellious aspirations, see in an independent-minded officer who always seemed to be in the thick of things, but a role model? Now that was a daunting responsibility.
"I'm sorry," said Leia. "I can't imagine what it must feel like to miss someone so badly. I hope you'll never know."
Juno collected herself and forced a smile. Time to change the subject. "It makes fighting the Emperor and our friends, the Senators, look easy in comparison. At least their fights we can win." Like a good diplomat in training, Leia picked up on her signals.
"Well, I'm sure we'll find ways to keep you busy.
Thanks for your support, Juno. I'll be in touch again soon. We won't be sitting on our hands out here, that's for sure. The moment we have a target, the fleet will be ready to move." Leia smiled and raised her hand as though to hit a switch at her end.
"Oh, before I go," she said, "if your droid is playing up again, have you considered that it might not be a random malfunction? There could be a reason for it, beyond a simple glitch."
"Like deliberate sabotage, you mean?"
"Maybe.
Or a message. Or something else entirely." Leia shrugged.
"I don't know.
It's worth thinking about, though." Juno nodded.
"I will. Thank you."
Leia fizzled out, and suddenly Juno was sitting face to face with the droid himself.
"What do you think, Proxy? Are you trying to tell me something?"
"I can't imagine what, Captain Eclipse. When I have something to communicate with you, I use the verbal interface my makers gave me."
"You're all talk, in other words."
"Correct."
"My thoughts exactly."
That left sabotage, or a message from someone else. But who would go to so much trouble just to send her images of Starkiller and herself? It didn't make sense.
"We have you on approach, Captain Eclipse,"
said a familiar voice over the comm.
"Welcome back."
"Thanks, Nitram," she said, quickly taking stock of the shuttle's location. It was decelerating smoothly on autopilot for the Salvation's mid-spine docking tube. Taking the controls, she adjusted its trim and gave the thrusters an extra nudge. Just seeing the frigate raised her spirits. "Break out the old jank spirit. It's good to be home."
Seriously, sir?"
Juno smiled at her second-in-command's tone. Sometimes the Bothan was too easy to tease. "Of course not. We have work to do. The bottle stays in my safe until the Emperor is dead."
"Yes, sir. Understood."
The Salvation loomed ahead. Juno put all other thoughts from her mind as she jockeyed the shuttle in to dock. Chapter 11. From Dagobah to Malastare was a relatively short journey, but it seemed to take forever. With nothing to do but think and worry while the rogue shadow was in hyperspace, Starkiller paced relentlessly from one end of the ship to the other, turning over everything he'd seen and felt on the swampy world receding behind him. He has a healthy head start.
We've been breached! Troopers boarding!
Juno lying dead in his arms.
Whatever you have seen, follow it you must!
He had gone to Dagobah hoping for clarity, and all he had received were visions and cryptic advice. Was he closer to Juno, or getting farther away? Would he be able to save her, or was she already dead? The Force reflected his inner turmoil, sending occasional shudders and shakes through the ship. He tried his best to calm down. If his mood disrupted life support or the hyperdrive, he might not make it to Malastare at all. Finally, the Navicomp chimed, warning him that his destination was approaching. Leaving the meditation chamber, he hurried to the pilot's seat and took the controls. The moment the stars of real space ceased streaking, he had the ship under power and accelerating toward the high-gravity world. Starkiller had visited Port Pixelito just once, while in the service of Darth Vader. A treacherous Imperial aide who'd run up gambling debts from pod racing had been his target, and one soon dealt with, even in the early days of his apprenticeship. In disguise and with Proxy's help, he'd infiltrated the security installation without being detected, then sliced into the mainframe to find his target. From there, he had crawled through ventilation ducts until he was above the target's private chambers, then force-choked him while he worked at his desk. Escaping had been just as simple. To date, he was sure no one knew what had really happened that night. Seeing the world brought back memories of his first pilot, a dour old sergeant who rarely spoke and who flew the rogue shadow like it was an ore barge. Like the murdered aide, he hadn't lasted long. Tardiness wasn't tolerated in Darth Vader's employ. That mission had been 5 years ago, but the Starkiller in his mind seemed barely a child to him now. So much had changed since then. He had died at least once, for starters. The crowd on the ground cleared his head of any kind of nostalgia. Spaceports were typically chaotic, but this one broke all the records. Since the collapse of Imperial control, all manner of beings roamed the streets, free to pursue whatever dreams or fancies took them. Starkiller kept his guard up, and his senses tuned for Kota. The old man had said that he was heading here after Kominor, and he had definitely arrived. Starkiller recognized that mix of anger and self-control anywhere. The trail led him to a market, and from there, to a machine repair shop. A cover, he assumed. Kota was very close now. He went inside. It looked perfectly innocent, from the mess of spare parts to the three-eyed Grand behind the counter. Behind the facade, though, Starkiller could sense something very different.
The Jedi, he said, exactly as he had on Kadon Imordia. Where is he?
No Jedi here,
said the Grand, blinking its eyes one at a time from right to left.
Got something to fix?
I'm not a customer.
He raised and passed his hand in front of the Grand's face.
You'll show me the way.
The Grand couldn't resist the Force. Starkiller's suggestion was as implacable as gravity, made all the more irresistible by his urgent need. The Grand pointed hesitantly at the shelves. There was no door visible. Starkiller didn't have the patience for guesswork, not when Juno's life might be at stake. He faced the wall and force-pushed gently at first, but with growing insistence. Machine parts rattled and shook, glass smashed. With a groan and squeak of tortured metal, a section of the wall began to swing back. There was movement on the far side. Someone fired at him. He deflected the bolt effortlessly into the ground and leapt through the gap, sending what seemed like a mountain of spare parts flying ahead of him.
A green lightsaber flashed toward him. He blocked it with both of his. By the mixed light of their blades, he recognized Coda's face, and Coda recognized his in return. The general performed a startled double take.
"What's with you, boy?"
he asked, deactivating his weapon and stepping away.
"You could have knocked."
"I'm in a hurry." Starkiller kept one lightsaber at the ready. The space was large and cluttered, not helped by the mess he'd made on the way in, and he hadn't yet pinned down the location of the person who had fired the blaster at him. "I need to find the Alliance fleet."
"You've had a change of heart, then?"
"I wouldn't say that. The fleet's about to be attacked. I need to stop that from happening at all cost."
"Lots of people looking for the fleet at the moment," said a voice out of the shadows. "Not all of them friendly."
Starkiller turned. Into the light stepped a broad-shouldered man holding an energy weapon trained at his head. He walked with an unusual gait and a strange whining noise. As he approached, Starkiller realized why. His legs were gone. In their place were three multi-jointed prosthetics, tipped with rubber feet. They moved with a complicated grace that had nothing to do with the way ordinary humans walked.
"Who are you?"
"I'm the repairman," he said. "The name's Shire. What's yours?"
"I don't have one anymore. Is that a problem?"
"That depends. Do you vouch for him, General?"
"I do."
"He part of your new squad?
A spy, perhaps?"
"Not exactly."
"So how does he know the fleet's about to be attacked?"
"It's a long story," Starkiller said.
"I'm all ears."
"I had a vision," he said, directing his words to Coda. It didn't matter what Shire thought. "The fleet was near a nebula, one I've never seen before. It was taken by surprise. Several fighters got through the defenses. Juno's ship was hit. She was hurt. Then I saw her die."
"Juno?"
asked Shire, lowering his weapon. Starkiller glanced at him. "I don't know whether I was seeing something that happened in the past or the future, but every second you hold me up makes it more likely I won't be able to fix it."
"She was here yesterday,"
Shire said.
"I told her where to find the fleet. It's stationed just off a tiny nebula."
"Thank you," Starkiller said, deactivating his lightsaber. "That's all I need to know." He turned to leave, but Coda stood in his way. The general's armor was still battered and bloodstained, but he had regained his strength and confidence.
"Just slow down, boy. How do you know this isn't a trap?"
"It might well be," he said. "Vader is hunting me. I saw that too."
"What if the vision was a fake? You should at least think it through before charging off on your own."
Starkiller saw the sense in that. There were inconsistencies in what he'd seen that had bothered him ever since Dagobah. Painful though the events of the vision were, he forced himself to remember them, searching for incriminating details. If it was a fake, then maybe the other visions were too.
"She was the captain of a frigate," he said. "But you told me that. I only got a glimpse of the instruments. It looked like a Nebulon B. It was called the Salvation."
Coda nodded. "That's your ship, all right. Her second in command was an alien of some kind.
Bothan." "But I saw Proxy," he said. "And that can't be correct, can it?"
"She and Bail Organa found your droid on Corellia. She must have gotten him working again." Coda and Shire exchanged glances.
"Sounds real to me," said Shire. "So what are we going to do about it?"
"You're not doing anything," Starkiller said. "I'll handle this."
"You won't get within a parsec of the fleet without me," said Coda.
"You don't have the authorization codes.
So give them to me."
"Are you ready to expose yourself like this?
Have you thought through what'll happen when you turn up in the middle of the fleet
as though you've never been away? Starkiller hadn't, but he was beginning to now. If the rebellion was as riven by arguments as Coda had said, and if Coda had told anyone else about the Jedi Starkiller had murdered, then his arrival would be like an antimatter bomb going off among them. It might take months for the pieces to come back together, if they ever did. Rushing in might end up placing Juno in more peril in the long run.
All right, he said. You're coming with me.
And if I'm coming, so's my squad. I'll call them, and they'll be ready to lift off within the hour.
I don't know.
How many ships did you see in your vision?
7, maybe 8.
Let my crew handle them while you look after Juno. Besides, they need a bond. Fighting Imperials is just the thing for that.
Coda held out his hand, and Starkiller, resigned to the sense the general was making, shook it.
You move fast, old man. Stand still too long and you're dead.
Coda left the workshop to call his squad, leaving Starkiller momentarily alone with the repairman. Shire was staring at him with an odd expression on his face.
You're him,
he said. A crawling sensation went up Starkiller's spine.
Him who?
Juno told me about you. You flew together. She told me she loved...
A pained expression flashed across Shire's face.
She told me you died.
Starkiller didn't hesitate. He didn't need people talking about him behind his back. Not when Darth Vader was sending bounty hunters across the galaxy in search of him. The wrong word in the wrong ear could bring about a much greater disaster than the one he was trying to prevent. He took 3 steps closer to Shire and raised his left hand.
You don't know me, he said.
The repairman stiffened and his voice took on a distant tone.
I don't know you.
I was never here.
You were never here.
Neither were Coda and Juno.
Neither was Coda.
Or Juno.
Shire's jaw muscles worked.
Or Juno.
Good. You've got a lot to clean up and you'd better get on with it.
Okay, well, I've got a huge mess to clean up here. Guess I'd better get on with it.
Starkiller released his hold over him. Shire turned and went looking for a broom. Starkiller left him to it.
Coda's squad had a ship, a modified Gutrak 630 freighter that had seen extensive action, judging by the carbon scoring on the hull and the slightly cockeyed look to its drives. Coda arranged for them to assemble at the ship, a dozen berths up from the Rogue Shadow. Starkiller didn't want to meet them, but Coda insisted.
The medic, at least.
There's something you need to hear. Starkiller grudgingly consented to listen. They found a quiet corner in a smoky cantina, where the 3 of them could talk in private.
Nike Vance.
The medic was a fast-talking Saurian with a high-domed skull and amazingly elaborate eyebrows. They rose up and down rapidly as he talked, providing a visual counterpoint to his words.
Coda tells me you want to make a clone.
That was news to him, but he could guess where it was going. Do you know how it's done?
I ought to. For 5 years I worked with the Comite. They're the galaxy's experts at this kind of thing.
Where was this?
On Kessel.
I didn't know they had cloning facilities there.
They didn't, said Nike Vance. We were slaves.
Of course. Starkiller indicated that he should continue.
The Comites have been cloning themselves for 1,000 years, and they've got it down to a fine art. It defines their entire culture. They have certain lines they reproduce over and over again, lines that are good at teaching, good at art, good at politics, and so on. Each line is basically the same person made multiple times over. On the whole planet, there might be only a few dozen true individuals. The rest are just repeats, passed on down the generations.
That's not the kind of thing I'm after, said Starkiller.
I know. You're after immortality. Everyone is when it comes to clones. Either that or an army. And even the Emperor's worked out that this doesn't work in the long run. It's too expensive and dangerous. An army made up of the same soldier is either 100% loyal or 100% against you. When your enemy has to convince only one mind to turn, you're walking on thin ice.
I don't want an army, Starkiller assured him. Tell me what I need to know.
You need to know that cloning won't make you immortal either.
Why not?
They've never managed to fix the memory problem. Not even the Comites. Each clone they make is a new person. One based to a very large degree on the original, but still one that has its own identity, its own memories, its own weird quirks. They don't think they're the same people. Just different versions of the same template. And that's not immortality. Sorry.
I've often wondered, said Coda, leaning into the conversation, why the Jedi didn't just clone ourselves after Order 66. I mean, there weren't many of us left. Why not take the ones we did have and create some more? It wouldn't matter if we didn't think we were the same person. We wouldn't have to, as long as we could fight.
Ah, well, now that's an entirely different problem.
Nike Vons leaned forward, too. His eyebrows attained a whole new level of animation.
You see, the other thing that no one has ever managed to copy is force sensitivity. Worse than that, it actually gets in the way of the cloning process. We don't know how. It just does. The Comites are aware of the problem, and they do everything they can to stamp it out.
Starkiller's surprise must have shown on his face, for the medic nodded emphatically at him.
That's right. They weed out force sensitivity. Can you imagine? That's how big a problem it is.
What would happen if you tried to clone someone force-sensitive anyway? Nike Vons sank back into his seat with a dire look in his long face.
Terrible things. Insanity. Psychosis. Suicidal tendencies. Who wants a crazy force-sensitive running amok in your lab? No one.
No one. Agreed Starkiller, thinking of Kamino and the damage he'd left in his wake.
Sorry,
said Nike Vons, misreading his grim mood for disappointment.
Looks like you're going to have to ride out the war with the rest of us.
That's not... He started to object, then thought better of it. Right. No pain, no gain. Guess I'd better get used to it. They left the cantina and headed back to the ships. Starkiller left Coda to organize his squad, not particularly caring about the band of mercenaries and wannabe heroes he'd assembled in little more than a day. They would perhaps be useful in preventing any kind of harm coming to Juno, and Starkiller was more than happy to employ them in that regard. But he doubted their involvement together would extend far beyond the end of the mission, whichever way it went. Juno's voice spoke to him from his memory.
We can help each other.
Nobody can help me.
I don't think you really mean that. I just think you're afraid to let me try.
Is that really what you think? He had asked. I'm afraid of you? The very suggestion had seemed preposterous then, but it didn't anymore. Just the thought of Juno had a profound effect on him. He would slash his way through 100 emperors to save her, if he had to. There was nothing he wouldn't sacrifice. Not even the very rebellion that the original Starkiller had created. That truly was a frightening thought, one he kept carefully hidden from Coda. The engines were warm and ready by the time the general walked up the ramp and into the bridge. You don't look terribly reassured, Coda said, taking the co-pilot's seat. Should I be? The rogue shadow lifted off with a louder roar than usual, as the repulsors fought the intense gravity of the world. Turning the ship nose upward, Starkiller aimed for the sky. Over the screaming of the drives, conversation was temporarily impossible. Blue turned to black, and the first stars appeared. Dodging heavy orbital traffic, Starkiller didn't wait for the squad's disreputable freighter. He would meet them at the other end. Space stretched and tore. The rogue shadow leapt into hyperspace and began the flight for the Itani Nebula. Of course you should feel reassured, said Coda, with a persistence that shouldn't have surprised him. For more than 15 years, the Emperor and all his minions had been hunting the Jedi. It took a mammoth kind of stubbornness to have survived so long against such odds. You're on your way to see Juno. You've got reinforcements. And best of all, you know you can't be a clone. So why haven't you told anyone I'm back? How do you know that? Because the repairman didn't know. And the way he was talking, Juno didn't know either. Well, I figure that's your business, who you tell and who you don't. Back in the Thiga system, you said it was entirely the Alliance's business. Maybe you convinced me to stay out of it until you're ready. There are already too many confused people running this rebellion. Are you saying you're ready now? He searched his feelings. No. Not until Juno's safe. And she'll probably need to see you with her own eyes. Otherwise, she won't believe that you're really back. I keep telling you, I'm not him. The General's blind stare was full of disbelief. Even now you think that? After everything Nike Van said? He didn't really tell us anything. Only that cloned Jedi can't exist. Have never existed in the past. That's an entirely different thing. The Comites have been grappling with the problem for 1,000 years. Do you think Vader solved it overnight? With the help of the Kaminoans, maybe. Or they didn't solve it, and I'm as crazy as I feel sometimes. You act no crazier than you originally did. Coda wasn't joking. A bit more obsessive, perhaps, but who can blame you? You love her. It's only natural to want to save her. You love her. Starkiller could say nothing to that for a moment. Those three words hit him harder than he could have anticipated. Not just because it was Coda saying them. Coda, the gruff career soldier who had never displayed the slightest amount of emotional awareness in Starkiller's presence. Because it was the present tense, not the past, and because it was about him. There was a world of difference between Juno, the woman he loved, and Juno, the woman Starkiller had loved. Perversely, that only deepened the blackness of his mood. Did he have the right to love anyone if he was only a clone? She had loved the original, not him. What if she rejected him? What if she had put the original behind her and had no room in her life for him now? She was a captain in the Rebel Alliance. She had duties, responsibilities, staff, timetables. She couldn't drop everything and run off with him. And there was no guarantee that the rest of the rebellion would accept him if he wanted to stay. Who wants a crazy Force-sensitive running amok in your lap? Acknowledging that he was a psychotic clone who would never be worthy of either Juno or the Rebellion was somehow more acceptable than believing that he was the real Starkiller, who beyond all kinds of understanding had managed to return from the dead. To kill again. Coda got out of his seat and opened a small wall compartment. He rummaged inside for a moment, then his right fist emerged, tightly holding something in its grip. He returned to Starkiller's side and opened his hand to reveal what he had found. There lay two bright crystals, as blue as Juno's eyes. "Where did you get these?" Starkiller asked. "Relics of the Clone War. It doesn't matter. The point is, they're yours if you want them." Coda pushed his hand towards Starkiller, who made no move to take them. "Does this mean you believe I'm not a clone?" he asked. The General exhaled heavily. "Honestly, I don't know. But I'm beginning to think it doesn't matter." Again, the blind eyes pinned him, but for once they revealed more about Coda than the person he was looking at. Starkiller could feel the hatred churning inside the General as powerfully as it ever had. It was part of him that he had learned to live with. like his blindness. Sometimes it gave him strength. Sometimes it worked against him. Starkiller couldn't imagine what it must have been like after Order 66, balancing the need to survive against the absolute requirement of all true Jedi Knights, that they never succumb to the dark side. Coda's hatred was directed at the Emperor, but its focus was Darth Vader. Starkiller didn't know why. There were probably 1,000 reasons, reasons Coda himself would never reveal or dwell upon, most likely. The General wasn't one for living in the past, or for worrying about the means as long as the end was in sight. To him, the return of Starkiller was an opportunity to strike at Darth Vader, just as, to Starkiller, Coda was a means of finding and saving Juno.
You love her.
Some obsessions were worth it. Starkiller took the crystals and made his way back to the meditation chamber, seeking a peace he suspected the General would never find. They were met at Nordra by outliers of the fleet and given the coordinates they needed. Coda quizzed them about recent traffic. There had been some, but nothing suspicious. Juno herself had come through less than a day earlier. Starkiller felt all his hopes and fears magnify at that simple confirmation of fact. She was close, so very close. Soon he would be with her. What happened after that? Only time and fate would tell. The squad's freighter wasn't far behind the Rogue Shadow. For all its lopsided engines, it could clearly hold its own. The convoy of two headed off toward the nebula, scanners peeled for anything out of the ordinary. Slowly, slowly, the kaleidoscopic view shifted ahead of them. "This is taking too long," Starkiller said through grinding teeth. "I'm using the hyperdrive." "The mass shadow of the nebula, I don't care." His hands flew across the controls. "The others can come the long way if you want."
"They'd better. None of them is as good a pilot as you."
Starkiller acknowledged the compliment with a brisk nod. When the Navicomp was ready, he sat for a moment with his hands on the controls.
"I've been thinking," he said slowly, "about the Alliance."
"About your place in it?"
He shook his head.
"About what it should do next.
If I give you the nav coordinates and schematics for a secret cloning facility on Kamino, everything needed to launch a successful assault, will that go some way toward helping them believe in me again?"
Coda chewed this over. "The facility where Vader claims you were made?"
"If his claims are true, then Kamino is much more of a threat than any ordinary stormtrooper factory."
"Maybe. But the Alliance couldn't pull off an attack like this without your help."
"They'll have to," he said.
He activated the drives. Real space smeared and stretched, vanished into the paradoxical light of hyperspace. "They wouldn't trust me to lead anything yet anyway."
"I would.
The Alliance is more than just you and your militia, Coda."
Instead of being offended, the General grinned.
"If what you saw comes to pass, you'll be glad you picked us up."
Starkiller acknowledged that, but his mind was unchanged. Judging by everything he'd learned from Coda, the Alliance didn't need someone to lead them into battle. It needed to find strong leadership among the leaders it already had. The ship shook, disturbed by the widely distributed mass of the nebula. He gripped the console, urging it to fly straight, by the force of his will.
This had to work.
He had to arrive on time. There was simply no other option. The Rogue Shadow exploded out of hyperspace, tumbling wildly. He corrected its trim automatically, firing retros even as he searched the scopes for the fleet. The sky was a mess of glowing gas and light. The scanners picked up two minor asteroid fields, a distant protostar with a single gas giant, and finally, a small scattering of starships. He brought the ship about, ion engines blazing. No sign of attack, he said.
Stay on guard, said Coda. A powerful glimpse of the future like you experienced is rarely wrong.
The fleet grew larger and more detailed through the cockpit viewport. Starkiller searched the ships for the one he was after. He recognized the Salvation more by instinct than knowledge. Like all Nebulon B frigates, it was heavy at fore and aft, with a relatively thin spine connecting each end. Engines and reactor were confined to the rear. Command and crew quarters were up front, near primary communications and sensor arrays. This example looked old but well-maintained, a reliable worker that had found a good home with the Rebel Alliance. The Salvation wasn't the biggest or the newest ship in the fleet, but Juno was inside it. He was sure of it. Finally, he had found her.
Rogue Shadow,
came a voice over the comm.
Please transmit landing codes.
Starkiller froze at the sight of something on the side of the approaching frigate.
What is it, boy?
He could only point at the crest adorning the Salvation, adorning every ship in the fleet he saw as they grew nearer. He remembered seeing it only once before, on Kashyyyk, but he knew what it was. It had been an integral part of the life Darth Vader had stolen from him when he was a child.
My family's crest, he said. It's everywhere.
Yes, said Coda, tapping the chest plate of his armor, where Starkiller belatedly realized the same symbol lay buried under a thick layer of muck. I suppose I should have told you about that.
What does it mean?
That you're part of the Rebel Alliance, whether you want to be or not. Rogue Shadow,
came the voice from the fleet a second time.
Landing codes immediately.
Four Y-wings were nosing in their direction, to either escort or intercept. Starkiller thought through the fog of surprise. Coda leaned over and punched the comlink.
This is General Rom Coda, he said, requesting permission to board the Salvation. Authorization Talus Haroon 10-11-38.
The voice didn't respond immediately. When it did, there was no mistaking the surprise.
Code checks out. Good to have you back, General. You're cleared for docking.
The Y-wings peeled away.
If you give me the data on Kamino, said Coda, I'll do what needs to be done.
Starkiller leaned forward and peered through the canopy at the Salvation. The crest painted on the hull loomed over him like a shadow. His father's voice came to him from the deepest refuges of his memory.
I never wanted this for you.
He sensed the final pieces falling into place, the last of the gaps closing up. He was here, on the brink of seeing Juno again, and his mind was whole. Whoever he was, wherever he had come from, he was complete. He only hoped against hope that he would be enough.
Chapter 12.
Juno stood on the bridge of the Salvation, feeling the smooth operation of the ship and crew around her, as though they were parts of her physical body. With a change of uniform and a decent meal in the recent past, she felt entirely transformed. Being restored to command had felt like being returned to life. There was indeed something in what Leia had said about having a frigate at her disposal. It was truly nothing to be sniffed at. At the back of her mind, though, was something her flight instructor had drummed into her all the way through her training. Getting too comfortable was just asking for the universe to provide a kick in the pants. She went through everything that had happened in recent days, searching for the one thing that had gone wrong, for the boot that might already be on its way to shake her out of her complacency.
Captain,
said Nitram, with surprising hesitancy.
We have the Rogue Shadow in view.
Impossible,
Juno said automatically, assuming someone had made a mistake. It was destroyed on Cato Nymoidia. But even as she said the words, she saw it in the scopes, accelerating smoothly toward her. It can't be him, she said to herself through a stab of surprise and guilt in equal measures. Then a more likely possibility occurred to her. The Imperials must have captured it and are using it as a disguise. Targeted all weapons. The bridge crew jumped into life around her. Alert sirens wailed. Then Coda's voice boomed out of the comm.
This is General Rom Coda, requesting permission to board the Salvation.
He can't be, she repeated, barely hearing the authorization Cody gave. It can't be him.
Captain.
She blinked. If it's a trick, there's only one way to find out.
Let him board.
We'll greet him with every soldier available.
Yes, sir.
She stood straighter and kept her hands behind her back. They were clenched into fists.
You abandoned him, she told herself. You gave up on him. You left him behind.
Any relief she felt at the possibility of his survival was buried under the crushing weight of remorse.
Blackguard to blackout,
came Coda's voice over the comm.
I'll take it,
she said, reaching for her comm link. Nitram patched the transmission directly through to her. This is Blackout, she said, taking a deep breath. What's your status, Blackguard?
Back in the game,
he said with obvious relish.
I have intel on a major target that I can't take out on my own. Do you think the Alliance will be interested?
The meeting with Mon Mothma, Garm Bel-Iblis, and Bail Organa was still fresh in her mind. I think they'll be very interested, Kota.
Good. Here it comes.
A second later, the intel arrived on the bridge. She picked up a data pad and scrolled through the files, seeing floor plans, security systems, troop deployments, everything the fleet needed to ensure a victory over what appeared at first to be some kind of Imperial medical base.
No, she realized. A cloning operation.
It was way past the outer rim, too far for reinforcements to come in time, but obviously important, or else it wouldn't be hidden so far off the usual hyperroutes. One of many such super-secret facilities, supplying stormtroopers for the Emperor's ever-expanding army, she assumed.
Looks good, she said, hiding a rising excitement.
There was only one problem. Without knowing the provenance of the data, she couldn't be entirely sure it wasn't misinformation, even a trap. Where did you get this intel, Kota? There was a pause. She thought she heard movement on the other end of the open line.
It's best you see for yourself. We'll be aboard in a few minutes. Meet us then.
Will you also tell me how you killed Baron Tarko and got off Cato Nymoidia?
There was another pause, shorter than the last.
You did the right thing, Juno. I would have done the same.
The line disconnected with a click. She looked down at the comm link in her hand, feeling simultaneously drained and buoyed. Coda's return, with or without the data, was a momentous turnaround for the Alliance. The mission to Cato Nymoidia really could be considered a success now. They'd lost nothing and succeeded on every front. Mon Mothma would find it much harder to argue against such missions in the future. If Coda was the boot, it was suspiciously wrapped in velvet. Nitram was staring at her with an expression that mirrored her own feelings, and she understood suddenly that he was the one who had informed the Alliance leadership of her activities with Coda. He, her loyal second in command, was also a loyal Alliance soldier, wanting to do the right thing for the cause. It was only natural that he would experience the same internal conflict she had over helping Coda in his unsanctioned activities. He wasn't an automaton after all. Instead of feeling betrayed, Juno felt nothing but sympathy,
How long had he agonized over what to do? Why hadn't he come to talk to her first? What was he feeling now that the right thing he thought he'd done turned out to be utterly baseless? He opened his mouth as though to say something, but an alarm cut him off. He turned and checked the console in front of him.
I'm having trouble with the forward sensor array, Captain.
She studied the display screens around her. Interference from the nebula. They'd been having the occasional blackout ever since the fleet took up its current station, the result of nothing more sinister than natural forces. Proxy was examining the problem, too. He looked up with bright yellow eyes.
Perhaps. I'll try to pin it down.
She considered numerous factors at once. The arrival of Kota, the promise of a target, this strange glitch in the sensor array. It added up to something, but she didn't know what it was. Let's not take any chances, she said, punching the All Stations button on the console in front of her.
This is Captain Eclipse,
she said. Her voice echoed back at her from throughout the frigate.
Set defensive protocols throughout all ships. Prime your shields and check your scanners for anything that's not one of ours.
Nitram nodded, still checking the screens.
All clear, Captain.
Keep looking, Nitram. We can't be too careful.
Of course, sir.
In a secondary screen, she saw the blip representing the rogue shadow coming into dock. She watched it, wondering what its arrival foretold. Something nagged at her, an instinct that had for the moment no precise focus. The ground was shifting under her, but the landscape hadn't changed yet. At any moment, she expected her whole world to be overturned. A light flashed on the display in front of her, signaling a private call from Vetus. He probably wanted to ask about her alert. Not that there was anything wrong with reminding the crews of the various ships that they should be on constant guard against discovery and attack. Complacency had killed more soldiers than the craziest battle lust. She reached for the comm link to answer the call. A voice crackling over the comm beat her to it.
Captain Eclipse, we're picking up 5, no, 6 small warships coming in fast.
There it is, she thought, turning her attention to the screens. The Lexi Dio, an assault bomber, was under attack. Bright explosions pockmarked its hull. The missiles came from 2 of 7 small vessels darting and weaving across the sky. Whoever was piloting them was good. The next 4 missiles split the Lexi Dio from nose to stern, resulting in the decompression and death of everyone aboard. Horrified, she gripped the console with both hands. Where had the ships come from? They hadn't come out of hyperspace, or the fleet would have noticed them. The same with the nearby asteroid fields. Unless they had cloaking systems as sophisticated as the Rogue Shadows, which meant they weren't standard Imperial manufacture. Where they came from took second place, as all 7 vessels turned their attention to the Salvation and began attacking.
Shields to full!
She called over the intercom.
Open fire! All batteries!
A coded signal came from Commodore Vidas. Around her, the fleet began to break apart. Standard protocol in the event of discovery. A new rendezvous point lay in a code cylinder carried by every ship's commander. The surviving ships would regroup in that location, and the fleet would count its losses. Juno vowed not to be like the poor Lexi Dio. A missile got past the shields and exploded in the engineering section, making the deck shift beneath her. Red lights began to flash, signaling vents and structural damage near the hyperdrive. 4 of the 7 ships were targeting the main spine, but found stiff opposition from the frigate's Y-wing escort. As she watched, one of the remaining 3 hostiles rammed the Salvation just aft of the surgery suite. The ship didn't explode. Lodged nose first in the hull of the larger vessel, its engines flickered and shut down.
We've been breached!
Barked her second in command.
Troopers boarding!
Send a security detail to the main reactor.
Seal off life support.
A much more powerful impact sent crew flying. Juno gripped the console for dear life. Diagnostic systems showed red in the forward sensor unit.
Get those deflector shields up!
She shouted into the intercom. Another hit like that, and the frigate would be effectively blind. She checked internal cameras. They were flickering, full of static. Through thickening smoke, she glimpsed her crew fighting both fires and invading troops. The latter flickered and shimmered as though they had cloaking systems of their own. She'd never heard of such things. Luckily, they were struggling in a complex, ship-bound environment. Only against relatively still backgrounds did they have a clear advantage, and there weren't many of those in the Salvation at that moment. The ship couldn't risk jumping until the hyperdrive was looked at. Their only option now was to fight. A metal hand took her shoulder. Proxy's yellow eyes filled her vision.
Security beacons are going crazy. Captain Eclipse, I think we should...
Before he could finish the sentence, the bridge doors blew inward. She raised a hand to protect her face. Burning shards peppered Juno's skin, followed by a wave of intense heat. She ducked instinctively, along with everyone else on the bridge. Blaster bolts speared out of the cloud, fired by two stormtroopers wielding high-powered rifles. Juno's right hand found the blaster at her side. She had never fired it on the frigate before. When she'd strapped it on an hour ago, she'd had no conception that she would be doing so now. The universe's boot was firmly in play now. She came out from behind the main display console and released two bolts twice, fast, then ducked back down again before she drew return fire. The first shot took out one of the troopers. She heard his respirator wheezing as he went down, showering sparks. The second missed by a margin small enough to spook. She braced herself to fire at him a second time, but the arrival of four more troopers put paid to that plan. She wasn't the only one defending the ship. Nitram was crouched behind a display like her, peppering the troopers whenever they crossed his line of fire. Proxy had taken the blaster from a fallen navigator and was using it to harass the invaders, his image displaying a flickering form of camouflage of his own. Juno saw her own features come and go, with hints of Mon Mothma and Leia, too. There didn't seem any rhyme or reason to it, but she didn't have the time to think it through just then. The sound of fighting echoed all through the ship, not just in the bridge. Reports came from soldiers in a steady stream, but went unheard. Two more troopers went down near the entrance, taken out by concentrated fire from three sides. Juno rolled to a new position, covered by Nitram. He may have ratted on her to Mon Mothma, but against the Imperials, she could trust him implicitly. Her goal was to stop the troopers reaching the main console, even if it killed her. That was the symbol of her command. They weren't going to get their hands on it. Even as she blasted another trooper to oblivion, the smoke swirled oddly between the walls where the bridge doors used to be. The small hairs on her arms stood on end. Ships with cloaking systems, troopers with camouflage. How was she supposed to fight an invisible enemy? She targeted the swirls to some effect. One lucky hit killed the camouflage of one of the troopers, and she finished him off with a second shot. But she had no idea how many had arrived with him, how many were left to fight. There could be no others at all, or dozens already in the bridge. Perhaps if she killed the lights, they would all be at a disadvantage. Even as she thought that, Proxy was hit in the chest. He went over backward, showering sparks, innards screeching. She couldn't tell where the shot had come from. Nitram was next, shot from behind by someone he couldn't even see. The muscles in her jaw were like rock. The unfairness of the fight appalled her. Scrabbling for Proxy's fallen blaster, she stood up